morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking to Pat Kushlis from the Santa Fe World Affairs Forum about Yemen, and Rob DeWalt will be with us speaking of the arts. Right now, I would like to welcome Elaine Pagels. She's a professor of religion at Princeton University. She's a recipient of a MacArthur Fellowship. She's the author of many books, including The Gnostic Gospels, The Origin of Satan, The Beyond Belief, The Secret Gospel of Thomas, Reading Judas, The Gospel of Judas, and Shaping Christianity. And her forthcoming book is about the Book of Revelation and other books of Revelation. She will be giving a lecture tonight, sponsored by the C.G. Jung Institute in Santa Fe, at 7 o'clock at the James A. Little Theater. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
It's great to have you. Now, the Book of Revelation, whether people have read it lately or not, is full of horror, dragons, plagues, earthquakes, famine, and so on. Finally, the Last Judgment, and good winning over evil. There were other books of Revelation that didn't get into the Bible. What's the difference?
Yes, that's a fascinating question, and I only found out recently about the other books of Revelation. The one in the New Testament is all dreams and nightmares. It's just visions. It doesn't really have a story. It doesn't have ethics. It's an amazing book in terms of the images. It's also about the end of the world and, you know, the battle, as you said, between good and evil. It's the story of Star Wars or Lord of the Rings or any of those kinds of apocalyptic stories. And finally, good wins after a big battle. The other books of Revelation were actually found with what we call the Gnostic Gospels. And there may be 20 or 30 of them. But they're not about the end of the world. They're about how you find the divine in the world now.
That's a huge difference.
Yes, it is.
And it seems that I was looking, I mean, your book's not out yet. It's going to come out soon. But just the little preview that I've had so far, in one way of thinking, the other ones are kind of more practical.
Well, I think they are. And they come from lots of different sources. Some of them are Jewish. Some of them are Christian. Some of them are Egyptian and Greek. They're about the Greek god Hermes. And they may be influenced by Buddhist missionaries who were in Egypt at the time that these texts were written about 2,000 years ago.
In terms of the Book of Revelation that we do know, that is in the New Testament, what do we know about its writer, the prophet John? Who was he? What was his political, historical context?
Far as we can tell, John was a Jewish refugee from the war in his home country, in which Jews had rebelled against the Roman Empire in the year 66, and in the year 70, the Roman troops came in, 60,000 of them, and just completely destroyed Jerusalem. The fall of the temple, it's a terrible day in the history of Judaism. It's catastrophic. And I don't think we can really understand that book until we see that it's wartime literature. It's written by somebody who's suffered the war, who's worried about the consequences of war, and who's in agony about what happened to his people. And he's very angry, and he's waiting for the day then God will come and set it right, sort of finish off the Romans and all the enemies, and Christ will reign.
And so, looking at it through that lens, it seems like, as you say, the Book of Revelation is a kind of war story.
It is that, but it also, because it's written in these evocative images, I mean, he doesn't talk about Rome directly, because criticizing Rome directly when you're a subject of Rome can get you into serious danger. So he writes about it in the language of the classical prophets as monsters, beasts, whores, you know, these language you get out of Ezekiel and Daniel and all those prophets.
How do you understand, as a scholar, how do you go about trying to understand how the book was meant to be interpreted at the time? I mean, obviously, it'd be hard to interpret it literally, although I suppose some people do.
Some people always have. But actually, they're always rereading it in terms of their own time. If it's basically a war of, you know, the good forces against the evil forces, you can read into it anything, you know, from Al-Qaeda, you know,
right,
to whatever.
Well, has it often, I mean, you give us some examples of how it's been interpreted in past centuries.
What fascinates me is because the images are what one of my friends calls open symbols, that is, they're not very specifically tied to one kind of person or another, they could be read by people on both sides. One example is the American Civil War. In the horror of the Civil War, which is hard for us to imagine how many people died in that hideous war in this country, people on the Confederate side were reading this as the end of time, and this is what was prophesied by John and so forth. And people on the Union side were also reading it as the end of time. In the Battle Hymn of the Republic, you know, mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord, trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath is stored. This is all saying, this is the end of time. This is what John was talking about. So you can use it on both sides. Same thing happened in World War II and in the war in Iraq.
And it probably happened in the year 750 and the year 1232.
It happened exactly, as you say, when the Muslims, I mean, the evil was seen as Muslims at one point, in, you know, when the Muslims conquered Jerusalem.
Now, when I think about the way that the Bible is interpreted in contemporary culture, there's obviously a danger of moral oversimplification, and people seem to use the Book of Revelations or the Book of Revelation to draw very simple lines between good and evil.
Well, I think the book specializes in moral oversimplification. I mean, that's the point. It always says, if you're the reader, we're the good people. They, whoever you want to say they are the bad people. And the lines are very clearly drawn. There's absolutely nothing gray about it. It's black and white. And, you know, we suffer, they are evil, we will conquer.
Now, one thing that is quite mysterious in the midst of all this is, what does the end of time mean?
Oh, yes. Well, that's a tough one. I mean, for John and people like him, it meant that the end of the world was coming, and the day of judgment, God was going to judge the world, and it would come to an end. The other books of Revelation talk about the end of ordinary time dimension, right? Or they talk about how the divine is present in everything, in what we think of as war or peace or light or dark or different kinds of groups that seem to be completely oppositional.
And that gives rise to what we might call moral complexity in contrast to the other book.
Yes, it's a great relief after the Book of Revelation, because this book, it is truly fascinating. I started out not liking it much. I've gotten to appreciate the power of it. If you look at the culture, the music, the art that has poured out of that book, from Milton and Dante to Michelangelo and Blake, it's just an astonishing source of inspiration for artists and musicians. But moral complexity is not what it's about.
We're talking to Elaine Pagels about her upcoming book, which is about the Book of Revelation and other books of Revelation at the James A. Little Theater tonight. What is the process like for you as a scholar? So you are now facing this book that has been faced by billions of human beings since the year 90 or whatever.
Right.
And what is new about the context in which you're looking at it?
Well, I started working on it when I realized, you know, the United States was about to invade Iraq, and people were actually still using this book. And I got upset with that, as many other people did, and thought, how do people read this stuff, and why do they read it that way? And so I wanted to understand, what's the appeal of this book, psychologically, politically, socially, whatever, religiously? And then to see why that kind of story proved so appealing. The other books of Revelation are what really fascinate me, and I want to show tonight a lot of the art and music that goes with this book, but also show these other books that, for me, have real spiritual power.
Now, the question of, first of all, how were they found and why do we not know them?
We don't know them because they were banned by the bishops in the 4th century. At the time when there were enormous arguments after the Roman Empire became Christian about what books are the right books to read for Christians? I mean, the Hebrew Bible had been kind of established by the rabbis, but there were lots of Christian books. And there were many arguments about what to put in and what not to put in. We have actually five lists of, this is the real New Testament canon, between 350 and 400, and all of them leave this book out except the one that actually prevailed. And so the question of what is that book doing in the New Testament fascinates me.
What is it doing there?
I think what it's doing is serving the purposes of the people who put it there. They completely reinterpreted it. That's because John's images are so open, so multivalent, so labile, that you can do almost anything with them. And he interpreted it not as the whore and the beast and all the evil images, the monsters, not as the Roman Empire, which now is his patron, but as heresy. That is, any Christians he didn't like. And it's read that way by Martin Luther, who used it against the Catholic Church, and by Catholics who used it against Luther, and by the wars in Europe, the religious wars between Catholics and Protestants, and against Muslims. It's been reinterpreted over and over. But the way it can be reinterpreted and the openness of the symbolism is partly the source of its power.
Getting back to this question of moral simplicity versus complexity, was that part of the reason for keeping the other books of Revelation out? In other words, putting more of the kind of engagement and questioning and so on in the hands of the people who are reading the Bible?
Yeah, this was the question I started out with. How did this one get there and the other ones all were completely suppressed, so we didn't even know about them? And the person who put it there, his lifelong struggle was to establish an Orthodox church. Everybody signed this creed. Everybody has to believe this. If you're not in the Catholic Church, you're going into the lake of fire, which is pictured vividly at the end of John's book. So the end of the book of Revelation is about the lake of fire and the heavenly Jerusalem. These are your choices, right? And he said, well, it's a question of whether you're Orthodox or not. And to this day, if you walk out of most Catholic churches or any Christian churches in Europe, you'll see the last scene is the last judgment. It'll have the damned and the saved, so that when you walk out of the church, it reminds you that you better be in the right relationship to the right church or else.
I was thinking, and this has happened to me often as a young person reading the Bible and not being able to make head or tail of it, and then starting to read Buddhist scripture and Buddhist ideas, and then those kind of end up shedding some light on
yes.
Christianity and so on. And one of the things I was thinking, if the end of time is to have any meaning at all, then maybe it's an inner state.
You know, that's very interesting because, of course, Buddhists also talk about angelic and diabolic beings. But since the 4th century, many people have read it that way, and mystics have read it that way. It's clear that William Blake didn't think of it in any literalistic way. But you don't have to read it literally to take it seriously. And many people do read it exactly as you say.
For you, as a scholar of religion, and you've written many books that are accessible to the public, what is it like to encounter all the kind of maybe pop or even TV pop culture biblical interpretation that's out there?
I am fascinated by the hold on our imagination of these sort of remarkable collection of ancient traditions and images. I mean, it shows you how powerful they are. You see them in video games. I mean, my students have brought me all kinds of stuff about the Book of Revelation in popular music and songs and movies and all kinds of things that are going on. I find that very interesting. But I think we need to understand how that grabs hold of our emotions and our unconscious and the way it's manipulated, particularly politically.
And you think it's still being used that way?
Of course it is.
And I was thinking, everybody must think, I mean, and you've given many examples of this, that the Book of Revelation and the fight between good and evil is about a time that's just around the corner.
Yes.
In the year 90, they weren't thinking 2,000 years from now something is going to happen, any more than we're thinking that in the year 4,010, X and such is going to happen. We don't care. It's too far away.
No, but if you go on a website, I'm not sure which one, but there are websites that tell you where are we in the timetable of the end time. And we're right this is the cusp before the end, right? And that is exactly what people have said for 2,000 years, because that's the way the book is written.
Yeah.
The book, I mean, John was convinced that the explosion of Mount Vesuvius and, you know, the death of Nero, these were the signs of the end.
Well, and symbols like earthquakes, as our recent history has shown us, I mean, they happen all the time.
Earthquakes, wars happen all the time. Yes, I mean, the signs of the end are always with us. So it's always convincing.
Right. We're talking to Elaine Pagels. Now, if I may ask, for you as a professor of religion, do you practice or believe in any religion, or has this sort of inoculated you against that?
Well, maybe both. I started doing this because I was completely fascinated and intrigued. Was brought up to think religion was nonsense because my father was a scientist who had no use for it. I found it enormously compelling emotionally when I was about 14 and 15. And even though I left it, I just kept wondering, how does religion have such power? I mean, I think it's very much like any kind of art or music. It's the imagination, obviously. So my work has been a study of how religion has that effect on us. And I do that because I think I'm very susceptible to it. But it also is a sense, as you said, an inoculation, in the sense of you don't just buy into it. What I learned in working on the last book is that I don't care what I believe very much. I mean, of course, we all believe certain things. You know, we believe the car will start or whatever, because it's based on experience. But what I mean is, believing in the kinds of doctrines that Christianity offers doesn't interest me at all anymore. It's more how you engage these kinds of powerful images and how we deal with them. I think the book is primarily about hope and fear.
The book of Revelation that's in the Bible.
It's as though you take every nightmare you ever had and wrap it up into one huge nightmare, and the book of Revelation is that. And then at the end, it doesn't end with everybody, you know, dead on the floor like a Shakespeare tragedy. It ends with the New Jerusalem. It opens up into light. So it's almost, you think about it of approaching death, a personal death. You could think about it as a catastrophic destruction of the world. And there is also hope as well as terror in it.
Another thing that people could, in theory, do with your book is say, oh, well, this was the one book of Revelation that was used to manipulate the people and con them into thinking in terms of orthodoxy and simplicity, so we're not going to use that one anymore.
Well, I think that's a perfectly reasonable decision.
Are the other books of Revelation, are the texts in your new book?
Yes, I love some of these texts, and I'm going to talk about a few of them tonight and show people what some of what they are. And put excerpts from them in so that people can go and look at them.
Now, you have devoted your scholarly life to writing not only scholarly articles that only scholars can read, but stuff that's accessible to the rest of us. Why have you made that choice?
Because most of my friends aren't conventionally religious in any way, and I love sharing this work.
And have gotten a lot of fame and popularity from it.
Well, that's kind of been an unexpected pleasure, too.
Elaine Pagels is professor of religion at Princeton University, the author of many books. Her forthcoming book is about the Book of Revelation and other books of Revelation. And once again, tonight she is giving a lecture at 7 o'clock at the James A. Little Theater in Santa Fe, sponsored by the C.G. Jung Institute. For more information, you can go to santafeyoung.org or just show up at 7 o'clock tonight. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned. I'd like now to welcome, joining us by phone, Pat Kushlis. She's from the Santa Fe World Affairs Forum, and she's going to tell us about an event coming up called Yemen and the New Arab Uprising. Welcome, Pat.
Hi, Mary Charlotte. Thank you. The event is on April 8th. It is, as you said, sponsored by the Santa Fe World Affairs Forum, and it will be held at St. John's College. Our goal is to get people here and elsewhere to think about what is going on in this very turbulent country that sits in at a very volatile point on the southern part of the Arabian Peninsula. will begin with, it will be from 9 to 3, and it will feature former U.S. Ambassador Edmund Hull, and it will also include a talk on Yemen, life in Yemen, what's going on in there, by Susan Wyatt, with wonderful photographs by Peggy Crawford. And it will conclude in the afternoon with Yemen's turbulent world and a final panel which will look at Yemen in a larger perspective in the Middle East.
Ambassador Hull is somebody who spent, several years in Yemen, during the Bush administration?
He was there from 2001 to 4. That's correct. He was a career foreign service officer and spent almost his entire career working in the Middle East and North Africa.
So this is something that's geared to the public, basically anybody who is interested in learning something about a country that they might barely know where it is on the map.
That is correct. It's both for our members, but it's also for the public, and it will give people a chance to really get to know what's going on there and to, as the events break in the Middle East, to see, have a better understanding of what's the situation in this country and elsewhere.
Pat Kushlis is with the Santa Fe World Affairs Forum. They are on the web at sfwaf.org. And is there a number people can call for more information?
Yeah, they can call me if they'd like to. It's 505-550-6392.
Pat, thanks so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Okay, thanks so much, Mary Charlotte.
And I'd like now to welcome Rob DeWalt. He is with the Pasatiempo, Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexico. He's with us every Friday. Speaking of the arts, welcome.
Morning.
Just about every Friday.
Yeah, just about every Friday.
And you have opened a jar of honey and placed it in the middle of the table here at the Santa Fe Baking Company.
Yeah, this is some honey that my partner's father, he's an accidental beekeeper. Some bees ended up on his property from a Buddhist temple across the way in Kennewick, Washington.
This is enlightened honey.
Yeah. So I brought you a jar of Washington State honey today.
Wow.
So you just have to taste it. And
yes, and we are here tasting the honey at the Santa Fe Baking Company. Did you know that honey is my favorite food? It's also the name of my dog.
Honey is one of my favorite foods, and this is my favorite honey.
Excellent.
Russian olives, clover, lots of all kinds of good stuff in those bees. Anyway, how are you?
Fine, and I'm so excited that Professor Elaine Pagels is going to be at the James A. Little tonight. I've been reading her for probably over 20 years, other books that she's written, and she's one of those scholars, as we just talked about, who's really accessible to the public and writes in such a way that non-scholars can understand, which I love.
When is that again?
Tonight at the James A. Little Theater, and it's part of the C.G. Jung Institute.
Oh, gosh. But you know what? You know what's also tonight?
What?
Disco on Ice. This is going to be awesome. Disco skating event.
At the skating rink?
As hosted by the Genevieve Chavez Community Center, 7:30 p.m. tonight. And I'm not sure, when I was a kid, we did the disco roller skating thing. We had a roller rink in our little town of Westport, Connecticut.
Disco mirror ball, man.
Yeah. Oh, no, it was awesome. But this is disco on ice. So, I'm thinking put on those, big poppy 70s collars, put on the suit, maybe some gold lame, and head on down to the skating rink for some fun.
I guess I know what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be there. No, I won't.
Well, and then also tonight, there's a lot of things going on tonight. Hampton Sides will be at Collected Works Bookstore in conversation with yours truly at 6 o'clock, talking about the paperback release of the book Hellhound on His Trail, which is about the assassination and the hunt for the assassin of Martin Luther King. It's so good. This book is so good and so vivid. It reads like a true crime book. And there were people who have actually objected to it as being insufficiently, I don't know what, scholarly or something, because it's so vivid. But every single word in it is researched and true.
And it's Hampton Sides.
And it's Hampton Sides.
So there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And tonight at 6 o'clock at Tipton Hall, which is sponsored by the Santa Fe Art Institute, there is a panel discussion about the oil spill. Have you heard about that?
No. Oh, yes, of course I have.
Oil Spill Information Gulf panel discussion.
With Debbie Fleming Capri,
yes.
Ricky Ott, and Aviva Rahmani, moderated by Patricia Watts at 6 p.m. at Tipton Hall. There's a story about it today in Pasa Tiempo on page 36, actually.
All amazing people.
Yes.
Artists and Ricky Ott, a scientist and activist. And
now, weren't you speaking to someone about this yesterday?
Yeah, we talked to Ricky Ott and Aviva Rahmani and Diane Karp, director of the Santa Fe Art Institute, yesterday, in detail about all of this. So you can go to sfai.org to find more information.
I like the connections that you guys made yesterday to the Exxon Valdez spill and spill kids, which I had never really heard before. But it's an interesting term. I mean, it probably doesn't feel too good to be, you know,
yes,
called one of those
kids,
but they exist and they're out there.
Yeah, children. Well, because
I had no idea that there was that correlation between domestic violence and suicide to such an extent. I mean,
right.
you figure there's going to be some of that social fallout, but. I listened to you guys talking yesterday, and then I went online and did just out of curiosity, and I was like, I was blown away.
Well, I mean, it's just like war causes those mm-hmm. kinds of traumas. Natural and in this case, man-made disasters cause those mm-hmm. kinds of traumas. And especially, I mean, I think that, well, we don't have to get into it too much, but when it's a man-made disaster and it could have been otherwise,
uh-huh.
it makes it worse.
Yeah. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here.
You're
but
wrong here.
I have in this calendar here, Life is a Creative Process, is Creativity for Everyone, a 6 p.m. Talk on Monday, March 28th that includes Pasa Tiempo music critic and radio host. James Keller.
James
and
Keller.
And you.
Yes.
Right, Mary Charlotte and Desiree Mays in a panel discussion about the creative process in the second of three conversations hosted by the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum at 6 p.m. on March 28th.
That's Monday at the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum Annex on Grant Avenue.
On Grant Avenue.
Yep.
That's interesting.
Yes.
I didn't know that you were doing that.
Well,
I'm going to try and make it.
Yeah. Good. I think it should be fun. Desiree Mays is really stoked about all this work that she's doing. She's interviewed and recorded interviews with a lot of major league artists and scientists and people in other fields who are doing really creative work. And is probably, I hope, going to put together a book or something about it, but in the meantime is presenting it at this series on Mondays.
Cool.
Yep.
And this is the second of three?
Yes.
Awesome.
So the following week once again.
Okay, so it's week after week on Mondays. And there's a little blurb on that in the Pasa Tiempo. Wow. Disco on Ice, I just can't get over it. But anyway, the 24th Annual Choreographer's Showcase presented by the New Mexico Dance Coalition is tonight at 7:30 and on Saturday at 7:30 at the Rail Yard Performance Center. There's going to be modern dance, jazz, and tango. Tickets aren't that much. And if you call 920-0554, you can find more information about that. And that's Friday and Saturday. Also, there's a lot of theater going on. Two Wives in India continues at the Santa Fe Playhouse.
Oh, good.
There's a performance tonight at 8, Saturday at 8, Sunday at 2, and Thursday at 8. And I haven't seen it. Have you
Thursday,
seen it?
Thursday, the following weekend,
yeah.
presumably.
Yeah.
No, I've seen a rehearsal. I've seen a good chunk of the rehearsal of it, and I think it's good.
I'm going to go check it out. There's some student theater that's happening right now. Out of My Head, a play by ninth grade students from the New Mexico School for the Arts.
Nice.
At the Black Box Theater at Warehouse 21 tonight at 7 p.m. There are more dates if you call 989-4423 or go to warehouse21.org. You can find out the remaining dates for that. Crossroads. It's a student production of 7 one-act plays that begins for some reason at 7:33 promptly tonight and Saturday at the Santa Fe High School Theater over there on Yucca. And you can call 467-2975. I'm not sure what the one-act plays are, but these guys always do great productions. They always do great productions. So I'm looking forward to that.
On Thursday, the 31st of March at 7 o'clock, Giovanna Paponetti is giving a lecture on Kateri Teka Kwitha at the St. Francis Cathedral. And Giovanna is the author of Kateri, Native American Saint, and will speak about her paintings and her research into the life of this Native American who is called the Lily of the Mohawks. And she'll be signing copies of her books.
Yes. Have you seen the show down there at the Museum of Contemporary Native Arts?
No,
it's
not
tied
yet.
Into this? It's
yeah.
really good exhibit. Okay, I got to toot my own horn for a second. On Saturday, the 26th at Ahalini Studios, which is American Merida's studio over there on 2nd Street, is Porn Cake 2011, a competitive edible erotic art show. And it's a group show. There's going to be decorated cakes, a viewing, a contest, a tasting, sort of. And that's it's from 4 to 9 p.m. I'm not sure what time the judging is, but this isn't one for the kids. It's definitely an erotic art show.
Excellent.
So that sounds like fun. What else? Oh, Andy Warhol, Good for the Jews.
Yes.
Again this week.
Huh. It was last night and tomorrow night.
And tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm. And I have not seen the performance, but I've seen a DVD of the performance, and it is wonderful. Did you see it?
I didn't.
I think he's a profound and human and wonderful person, this guy, and very, very funny.
Yeah.
He's a good comedian.
Yeah. No,
Josh.
I can't remember his last name. Josh Kornbluth.
Josh Kornbluth, thank you.
Yes. Collected Works Shared Readings continue on Saturday with authors Robert Richardson, Thomas Chown, and Mike Orendorf at 2 p.m.
Yes, and that's connected with Left Coast Crime.
Yes.
And Left Coast Crime is the convention that's happening this weekend also in Santa Fe for people who are aficionados and just interested in crime fiction.
Crime fiction.
Mysteries.
Not just
all that
pulp
kind of
novels.
Stuff.
All kinds of different crime
There's
fiction.
There's some good crime fiction out
yeah.
there.
Yeah, the Albuquerque Turkey, for instance. And there's a story about it in today's New Mexican. I just saw it when I was walking in, looking at the little box where you can purchase such a newspaper. Santa Fe Farmers Market. I want to remind everybody that it's getting warmer. The stuff that we have at the farmers market right now is awesome.
Really? What?
Well, it's kind of green season, you know, sort of. There's a lot of things, but the kale, there's lots of kale. Potatoes, there's lots of potatoes.
So those kinds of greens that are in season because people have their greenhouse.
Yeah,
stuff
they're
set
hardier
up.
Greens. A lot of them resisted. I'm picking spinach out of my own hotbed right now. So go down to the Santa Fe Farmers Market from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. tomorrow and check out what they have. I can't wait for the big growing season.
Yes, indeed.
Let's see. Noche de Bohemia, the Santa Fe Tango Club's monthly DJ-driven Argentine tango dance party, is at 8 p.m. to midnight at Dance Station in Solana Center over there on Alameda Street. I have never set foot inside the Dance Station. Have you?
Yes.
I can't believe I've never been in there.
Yeah.
I need to get over there.
Yes. It's a good place to dance.
I guess people probably want to find out what's happening tonight as well as Saturday night. Anthony Leon and the Chain with Todd and the Fox over at the Cowgirl at 8 p.m. tonight. Todd the Fox, Todd Lovato from Santa Fe Community College, great musician, is going to funkify you. And there might be some banjo involved, too. We're not sure.
Are those mutually exclusive?
No, not to Todd.
Funk banjo.
Funk banjo. What else? Oh, the Matador. No Wave, New Wave with DJ James Reich. James is an utter and a musician and a really cool guy. And he's going to be DJing some post-punk and mutant funk at 9:30 over there at the Matador across from Evangelos.
Nice.
Right in the downtown area.
Mambo Fay Dance Company will showcase Lluvia con Nieve, Rain with Snow, an amusing story about a musician who leaves his home on a tropical island for a northern city where he encounters his first winter, choreography by Tony Perez, and that is Saturday, tomorrow, from 9 o'clock on, free dance class. It's basically a dance event, and it's at El Patio Café, the former Cloud Cliff. 9 o'clock. The show is. That's a little hard to understand when all of this is. For more information, go to mamboroomonline.com.
Yes, the Mambo Room. You like comics?
Sometimes.
Like comic books.
Yeah.
You should go check out Nathan Schreiber. Cartoonist signs copies of Power Out, which is personally one of my favorite comic books at the moment. That's from 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday over there at True Believers Comics and Gallery on Cerrillos Road, over there by Whole Foods.
Right.
Oh, Fine Art for Children and Teens 21st Birthday Celebration honoring the Naminga family. Hors d'oeuvres and silent auction 4 to 6 p.m. at Santa Cafe on Thursday the 31st. It's kind of a dinner thing, and there's an auction. If you call 992-2787, you can find out more information. Speaking of Mambo,
Yes.
Cafe Mambo Salsa Dance Party with DJ Sofrito on Wednesday the 30th at the Ore House at Milagro, which is kind of confusing a lot of people, but Milagro is at 139 West San Francisco Street.
Right.
Right downtown. But it's called Ore House.
Because Ore House has moved?
Well, sort of, yeah.
Has
so we have Milagro.
Cloned itself?
Yeah. Sort of.
Anyway, just say it's at Milagro.
Yeah, it's at Milagro 139.
Excellent.
Right.
And
which
that's
is also
good dancing. He's a good DJ.
Yeah, yeah. Which is also across from Evangelo, sort of.
Evangelo like the center of the universe around which you
it's
orient
the,
everything
it's
else?
The party magnet. And there's a lot of stuff that's going on at the underground at Evangelo's, too. So you should go and check that place out. It's in the bowels of Evangelo's. And that doesn't sound awesome, but it really is.
Choose your metaphors wisely.
I know.
Rob DeWalt.
I know. It's not a metaphor day for me.
So let's see. Saturday the 26th, which is tomorrow, from 1 to 4 in the afternoon at the Coronado Room of La Fonda, there is a demonstration of Ukrainian Easter egg making. It's a 2,000-year-old art that involves beeswax, brilliant dyes, fresh white eggs, and, well, skill. So for Ukrainian Easter egg demonstration, you can call for more information, 983-2127, or just go to La Fonda Coronado Room tomorrow at 1 in the afternoon.
There was something, we already discussed that. Never mind. You know who else, besides FACT, is having a birthday?
Who?
Corazon Nightclub is turning 2 years old, and they're having a second birthday bash on Saturday the 26th with local band La Junta and Alex Mario Band. So if you like you some blues and you like you some Southwest, hip-hop / Latin funk, you should head to Corazon at 9 p.m.
And
on Saturday.
On Sunday at 3 o'clock in Albuquerque at Bookworks, Dana Levin is going to be reading from her new book, Sky Burial. Is that right? Let's see. Yeah, she's going to be and have a book signing. So that's at Bookworks. We don't usually do that many Albuquerque events, but she is a Santa Fe poet, so we're just fitting that in.
I want to fit this in. The All Colors Youth Summit, the New Mexico Gay Straight Alliance Network, is presenting workshops from noon to 5 p.m. on Saturday, March 26th at Warehouse 21. There's also some open mic performances from 6 to 7 p.m. and a dance party from 7 to 10 p.m. If you call 989-4423 or visit warehouse21.org, you can find out more information about the All Colors Youth Summit presented by the New Mexico Gay Straight Alliance Network.
Excellent.
Oh, great bands coming to Corazon on Monday, March 28th, including Polarization, which is a band out of L.A., who happened to be on a label run by a fellow who used to live in Santa Fe and played in a few bands. They're going to be performing at 7 p.m. at Corazon with Quark Chaser, which is, I believe it's a three-piece. Philip Maddox on keyboards, Ben Durfee on drums, and let's see. Oh, and Zach Hogan, who's a bassist. And a lot of these guys used to be in the same bands together. It's kind of incestuous, but it's pretty good music. And that is at Corazon on Monday the 28th. That's going to be fun.
And on Tuesday the 29th, Santa Fe Concert Association Executive Director and Artistic Director and pianist Joe Illick will give his final Notes on Music lecture performance for this season. It's at the United Church of Santa Fe at 1804 Arroyo Chamiso Road. You can call to get tickets 984-8759 or visit ticketssantafe.org. And it's about order and chaos, the predictable and unpredictable elements of composition and melody, rhythm, and harmony. So that should be fun. He's a wonderful person, wonderful speaker.
That's great, yeah.
Yes.
Bill Hearn, good old Bill Hearn, is going to be performing at 7 p.m. on Sunday, March 27th at the Lodge at Santa Fe. He's going to be doing some strumming, some honky-tonk, some country. And speaking of country, on Saturday, March 26th at Buffalo Thunder Resort and Casino, Charlie Daniels is coming to town. The Devil Went Down to Georgia. Remember that song?
Vaguely.
You know, with the fiddle and the...
Yeah.
Devil Went Down to... And the, yeah. So he's going to be performing on Saturday, March 26th over there at Buffalo Thunder. What else? Oh, Brian Wingard, saxophonist, who is going to be performing at Museum Hill Cafe at 11:30 a.m. on Sunday, March 27th with John Trenacosta and Brian Bennett and Colin if I mispronounce this, I'm sorry, Colin, Dubel. Or Dublé, who knows? But if you go to ticketsantafe.org, you can get tickets for that. It ain't cheap, but these guys know what they're doing.
Now, today, there's something that I want to let people know about in case there's not already enough things to do today, but this one's a little bit early. An Aldo Leopold lecture with author William Powers is happening at 5:15 at the UNM School of Architecture and Planning on Central Avenue. For more information, you can call in Albuquerque 277-2903. And William Powers is an author whom we've had on the air before. He wrote a wonderful book called 12 by 12, A One-Room Cabin Off the Grid and Beyond the American Dream. And it was about his living in a little 12 by 12 foot house and what that was like. And it was kind of a It wasn't quite a Walden Pond story because the house was surrounded by all kinds of not very pristine stuff, but it was still a kind of inner and outer journey of coming to terms with living on small scale. And he's just he's a terrific author.
12 by 12.
12 by 12. And the reason it was built 12 by 12 was because it counts as a shed instead of as a house, and so the woman could build it without going through a very cheaply without going through a huge building process and all that
and
stuff
and permitting and all that junk.
Yeah, it was back east somewhere, and he's going to be back also sometime in we're going to try to get him on the air in April. I don't remember the exact dates, but anyway, terrific author, williampowersbooks.com.
Maybe I should think of that. Maybe I should pitch a shed somewhere, a 12 by 12. I don't know, I'd probably go stir crazy.
You know, hard to say.
Oh, I want to announce that my dog is out of her cone of shame.
Oh, good.
Yes. So Venus is healed. She gets her stitches out this week, and she no longer has to wear the cone of shame. So
good.
We're very excited for her.
And what happened to the pit bull?
The pit bull is TJ is still looking for a forever home, and if anyone out there has the time to spend with a 1.5-year-old dog. Who is kennel trained and knows to sit and lay down and is good with kids and other dogs, give me a call or email me over at the New Mexican. Or call me at 986-3039, or you can get a hold of me at the easier email address is taste@sfnewmexican.com.
Taste?
Yes.
Because you've got good
flavor.
Taste.
I've got mad flavor. what else? Let's see. On Friday.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. I wanted to talk about a couple of exhibits that are opening, including at Eileen Brazil Fine Art over there on Johnson Street, the Donna Party. I wrote a story about this in today's Positiempo. That's not the reason I'm mentioning it. I'm mentioning it because it's an awesome exhibit. David Lee.
The Donna Party?
The Donna Party.
D-O-N-N-A.
It's a play on the Donna. On the Donner Party and Donna Reed.
Ah.
And it would take way too much time to explain what this fellow does, but he's an amazing artist, and he's done a site-specific installation, a drawing there, that has to do a lot with one of the women on the Donner Party.
And did you see Cannibal the Musical?
No.
That was a It was Trey Parker and Matt Stone, the creator of South Park's very first film. I think it might have been a kind of the first thing they did when they got out of film school. And it was a musical about the Donner Party. Well, not exactly the Donner Party, but a thing like that.
Did I see something recently that they have like a Broadway show now?
Yes, it's called The Book of Mormon. I swear to God, I'm ready to cash in my retirement to go to New York and pay $125 to sit in the theater and see that movie. Jon Stewart interviewed them on The Daily Show a couple of weeks ago, and he said, Jon Stewart said, this was so good that I was angry.
At himself or his writers?
They're really good, and they've been working on this for 7 years. When you think about how funny South Park is, and they work on each one for a week, just imagine.
With 7 years, it's probably the cleanest funny material.
Exactly.
Well, not clean in the sense of clean. I mean, we're talking about Parker and Stone here, but
Unraveling the World Poetry Reading with Marcia Starkey Lane Upton, James McGrath on Sunday, March 27th at 1:30 at 1720 Medio Street. Call 983-8779 for directions.
Cool. other things opening tonight. I forgot to mention that at Eileen Brazil Fine Art, there's a reception tonight from 5 to 7 p.m. Fisher Press over there on Camino Alera is having an opening called Initial Conditions, Experimental Videos by Diane Armitage.
Nice.
And there's a reception tonight from 5 to 8 p.m. Also, Zane Bennett Contemporary Art, a retrospective 30 years celebrating color slash prints, abstract paintings by Joe Novak and prints by Jim Dine, I believe. Reception 5 to 7 p.m. through April 22nd. Santa Fe Concert Association's Bravo Kids. Performance from kids ages 11 to 16 tonight at 5:30 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church on Grant Avenue. That's going to be fun.
Truth and Reconciliation Tour of South Africa. Bernadette Champion will give a slide talk on South Africa at the Travel Bug today at 5:30. She's traveled widely in Africa and organized tours for 20 years. She's going to talk about the upcoming NAACP Truth and Reconciliation Tour and answer questions from interested travelers.
Awesome. What else is going on? There's tons of stuff going on. I believe that a global dance thing is still happening in Albuquerque. If I can find it.
Well, while you find it, let me mention that on Wednesday of next week at the Santa Fe University of Art and Design O'Shaughnessy Performance Space, where I went the other night to hear Saeed speak about his book. What a wonderful author. Anyway, it's just a great space. So Tabahara Bello, Michael Licht, and Roberto Capocchi at 7:30 will be playing classical guitar. Roberto is a classical guitar instructor there, and Bello is a virtuoso Brazilian guitar soloist, composer, and arranger, and Michael is a classical guitarist, banjo player, arranger, and composer. And so it should be lots of fun. Santa Fe University of Art and Design students go free, and otherwise it's still pretty cheap.
Let's see. Oh, Out of My Head, work by ninth grade students from New Mexico School for the Arts in conjunction with a play of the same name. I believe today is the last day that show is up. So go by Warehouse 21 and check that out. There are some folks in need, not necessarily in need, but the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival is still taking bids on entry. So there's a deadline of July 15th for the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival, which has grown considerably.
Indeed it has.
In the first couple of years. Entry forms and fee information are available online at santafeindependentfilmfestival.com, or you can call 470-2411. You're probably better off going to the website to get the information.
Excellent. So let's see. I guess that's all we've got time for today, but so much to do, so much more that we couldn't fit in, so you'll have to check out the Pasatiempo, which is the Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe New Mexican. Rob DeWalt, a wonderful writer-journalist for that magazine, with us every Friday speaking of the arts. It's just great to have you on the air,
as always. Oh, shucks.
You're the best.
No, you.
Are we doing lunch?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santaferadiocafe.org, thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. My email is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC local news, then jazz. And, oh, I forgot to say, on Tuesday at Collected Works Bookstore, Mary Oishi is bringing her new book, Spirit Birds, They Told Me, to Collected Works at 6 o'clock, and I'm going to be interviewing her on Monday.
Oh, cool.
And she's a very nice and good poet. And anyway, much, much more. Go to the Collected Works bookstore website. Go to the Garcia Street website. Go to the Screen. Go to the CCA.
Yes.
It's all good. Go to the Pasatiempo. Hasta la vista, baby.
Bye.
Bye.